Hey everybody, the Aaron Solo cast has begun. The image quality is probably going to be a little bit crappier than it is even normally because I just really zoomed in the camera. I didn't think it was there's much point in doing the chair of Jim, although you can see that he is in fact out of the studio. He's gone, Gonsville. It's nothing but Matt Damon over there. So today is going to be a weird lunch. It's not going to be lunch with Jim and Aaron. It's going to be just lunch with Aaron. Cause, if you didn't know, Jim is on vacation. He's out in the mountains, Colorado, doing some hiking. I think around in the Boulder region. So, it's just me holding down the fort. And instead of not doing a lunch with Jim and Aaron, I thought I'd just try to do a solo edition. And I tell you what, I was more nervous about this than the idea of getting up in front of a bunch of people in Huntsville, Alabama for the Rocket City NerdCon or any of the other live events, because doing a solo podcast is really hard. I've certainly never done one live. Usually I have an outline, and I can make, you know, when I'm struggling to say things like that, I can just pause and edit those things out. On live podcast, obviously can't do that. So I'm kind of nervous about this. I don't know how long it's going to last. Depends on how many questions I got. I was a little light on topics, and I put out a call this morning for more topics, and looks like people gave me a bunch of stuff to work with. So we'll see. The Q&A is turned on. There's multiple ways to get at me. The Q&A app, if you're watching, there should be a little link at the bottom of the Google Hangouts window that says join the conversation. You can click on that and ask Qs, and I can answer them. There's also hashtag baldlunch on Twitter, which I installed a Twitter client. I haven't had a Twitter client in a couple years. I noped out of Twitter about 2 years ago. Got one, and I'm searching the baldlunch stuff. And I also have a forum thread. So multiple ways to talk about stuff, to get stuff on the board. I'm going to start browsing the forum threads. All right, here's one. King Cobra said, since I've seen it come up a couple times, maybe a discussion about your Jehovah's Witness life experiences. I know when I was part of the group, I had many memories, both good and bad, that stick with me to this day. So I don't know if I knew this about King Cobra, that he or she was a witness. Of course, after I left, I heard that many things changed slightly. I have family that was still part of it after I left, and still some are part of it. The conventions stick with me as being as well as being groomed to be a quote-unquote brother. I was in 4th to 6th grade making speeches in front of the congregations, being judged on those talks, and looking back on it, being much more adult than I should have been at that time. Of course, those experiences helped with making presentations in school and college. This doesn't even mention all of the walking the beat and trying to get others to join the flock. One of the negatives that has stuck with me to this day is when a friend invited me to his birthday party. Being a Jehovah's Witness, my mother, of course, said I couldn't go. My friend told me when we got back to school that he even skipped his birthday cake in hopes that that would be enough that I could go, which hurt and stuck with me. Now, after having left, I looked into and has been interested in many different religions and practices. I don't practice any belief, but the topic of religion fascinates me, even though I can get very personal and heated for some folks. I agree. I'm fascinated by the concept of religion and spirituality. And on my softer, squishier days, I kind of consider myself a little spiritual. A lot of stuff I read when I was going through therapy and was coming out of the cult was, you know, touchy-feely stuff. Like I alluded to in the Mr. Robot podcast of last week, the daily affirmations. Like, that shit literally makes Jim break out in hives. And I was the same way. But it works to an extent that I don't know. I mean, I don't believe in supernatural things. I don't believe in ghosts and stuff. But I do think that there are things out there we don't know, or we don't know how the human body and the brain works in particular. And I'm not talking about, oh, we only use 10%. I'm saying, like, I don't understand why affirmations work. And it's also fascinating for me to read, like, psychologists and scientists to study the brain say that they don't understand how antidepressants work. So I think that stuff is all interesting. And I try, you know, I try not to be judgmental. Like, I can have a lot of interesting conversations with Christians or Buddhists or Muslims or what have you, so long as they're not, like, super douchey, I guess, about it. You know, the same way, like, I actually think that there's a many atheists that kind of fall into that category of they're just douches to talk with. And it's like, you're right, I'm wrong. They won't consider that there's another point of view, or But I don't know. I'm trying to think of a witness experience that I could talk about that was that I haven't talked about so far. I know I've alluded to the fact that one time Jim and I were tapped to be so one of the things he mentions is summer conventions. So every summer there's a series of conventions that are held all over the world. They're called district conventions, and the way it works down is that breaks down is like you have these circuit conventions, which usually are held in some kind of small regional building where you'd have 10 to 12 kingdom halls to get together. Okay. So a kingdom hall has roughly 100 to 150, what they call publishers, what maybe normal churches would call parishioners. So a circuit convention is around 1,000 to 1,500, I've heard tell, like in more urban areas like New York, that there might be 3 to 4,000. Then you got district assemblies, which are 6 to 10 districts, and you can have 10 to 20,000 people at those conventions. We always met at the Louisville Stadium, the one that the University of Kentucky, I believe, not their stadium, but their basketball arena that would hold, like, I think 24-ish thousand people, and we'd put 16,000 people in there. But you would go, usually it would start Thursday, like at 9 o'clock in the morning, and they would go until like 5 o'clock at night, and then you'd come back Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and maybe Sunday you'd get out a couple hours early to allow people time to travel, because that's the other thing, is usually you had to take off work, you had to get a hotel, and they also negotiated special rates for us at the hotels, the society did that controls the Jehovah's Witnesses. So you would have a list of approved hotels that you could book, and some of them were like, you know, you get the shitty Days Inn, and then you've got the Ramada. And that was always something funny, that the night that they listed the approved hotel list, that people would like sprint to the information board and frantically write this stuff down because everybody wanted to get into the desirable hotels, you know, even though we're all equal and brothers and sisters, and theoretically you'd want to save the nicer things for the elderly or the infirm. Fuck that. No, we want to get the place with the nicest pool, and it's by the exits with all the food, so we don't have to go far and at night to eat out. But something I always looked forward to every summer, because you'd get, number one, as a teenager, it's a great way to meet chicks, quote unquote, because, you know, in your congregation, you'd maybe be exposed to a handful of girls your own age. At the district convention, it felt like there was thousands of eligible sisters. And that was always the hope, that you'd meet someone and make a love connection and start a long-distance pen pal relationship, because it's not like you're going to fucking date some girl from the suburbs of Louisville if you live in Indianapolis. But one year, so in the highlight of the summer convention is the dramas. And I hear now that they've replaced these with, like, videotape shit. But in the old days, they would have usually a modern-day drama where people would just wear suit and tie and skirts, and they would pretend to be suffering with something, like, you know, little Timmy is getting pressure to join the sports team in school, and it's taken away from his spiritual focus on the meeting. So, you know, we'll have a couple of Jehovah's Witness kids dressed up as worldly kids in letter jackets, and they're like, come on, Tim, you're good at basketball, you play good pickup basketball, we need you on the team. And, you know, a blonde witness girl would be dressed in, like, a, you know, not, I guess, slutty by witness standard skirt, and she'd be like, yeah, Tim, and you're so sexy and cool, and you'd be even cooler if you joined the team. Ludicrous shit. And then they'd cut to the kid going home and telling his parents, and there's usually some kind of trouble, and, you know, maybe he would get wrapped into smoking weed, and then they would have the elders meet with him, and then they would show his life had gotten better. You know, he buckles down and turns away the worldly temptations, and then his life turns out well. And those are boring. Those are stupid. But the things that I actually look forward to were the biblical dramas, where they would, these brothers and sisters would dress up as these Bible characters, and they'd do like a drama, like Goliath versus David, you know, not one they actually did, because they'd have to find some freakishly tall dude or have a guy in stilts to do Goliath. But those are fun because, number one, the voice talent. So they would give you a tape, or I guess nowadays it would be a CD, that would have the entire dialogue and the musical effects. And like, if there was a battle, there would be the ching ching and whoosh, whoosh, from the arrows and the swords. And you'd play this, But it's up to the living performers to, like, lip sync this whole thing and synchronize their actions to, and you know, some of them did it really well. Like, they took it seriously, and the costumes were like, and you couldn't even really tell they're lip syncing. The reason they lip synced, I think, is because, you know, they started doing this in the 70s when, you know, miking up everybody would be prohibitively expensive and beyond the technical abilities of the brothers and sisters putting on the plays. So one year, I think I was 13. No, I was 14 because I got baptized that year. And Jim was like 9. And they are doing this thing with King Josiah. So King Josiah was the son of a really wicked, I think his name is King Asa, Jewish king, who turned away from the path of Jehovah. And in fact, at this time in Israel, the worship of God, of the true God Jehovah, had like waned, and the temple had fallen in disrepair, and they'd lost like big parts of the Torah. This is, you know, I don't know if this is accurate for historical purposes, but this is what this says in the Bible. And Josiah, when he was a young man, his father was assassinated, and when he was like 14, they were revitalizing the temple because he had directed that activity, and they found all this scripture that says, hey, you're not supposed to worship Baal and all these other idols, and King Josiah had them pull all that shit down. And but anyway, they needed 4 Josiahs because they're told the story from the time when he was like 7 until the time he was like, I think, 12, and then 14, and then 18. And Jim was the 8-year-old Josiah, and I was the 14-year-old Josiah, or maybe 15, maybe a 16. I don't know, because I was 14, and I remember that the kid that they got for the 18-year-old, we're all, like, I think he was 16, and he wore a full beard to show that he was a man full grown. And I wore a goatee, like a little fake stage goatee. Some sister, like, she glued this gum on my face and then kind of put it on and then trimmed it into a goatee, which I thought was pretty cool. But we all wore full costumes, and like, I wore, like, what's essentially a dress. It was super comfortable. But my mom spent, like, $300 on this costume, so it was, like, really heavy, very nice fabric, and I had this kind of like, you know, royal blue sash over me and this royal blue cummerbund, and I had this I don't know how they made the crown. It was on some kind of metal, and it had jewels and shit, and I was rocking my sandals and this goatee beard. And in several of the scenes, they needed Israelite soldiers. And Jim's dad played one of them. And Jim's dad is like this classic Italian guy. And at this time, he had like salt and pepper hair. And but he blacked it all up. And he's wearing this like leather tunic. And he's got this like kind of short skirt. And he had this like cool, like what's the sword that the Greeks used? Like hoplite? Is that the name of the troop? But they had like one of those short, like, you know, 18-inch dagger swords and a shield. And he was really, really bad looking, and he didn't have any lines. Like, I think he stood there beside the throne, and at one point, I had a couple false friends, King Josiah, that were trying to sway me to like, oh, why are you wanting to pull down the idols, man? That's where we do all our sex worship and stuff. And one of them, in a familiar way, went to like put his foot on my throne to approach me, and Jim's dad is his only line. He was supposed to lunge at him in a menacing, like, you know, back off, get away from, hands off the king kind of way. But that was super fun. And we spent that whole spring and summer rehearsing that, like 2 nights a week. We'd all of us that had parts. And there was, you know, this was like an effort with 5 or 6 congregations. So I got to meet a lot of people my age that I'd never met before. And it was like genuinely fun. They would have pizza in there, and you know, when it wasn't our part, we could goof off and like just talk about Star Wars or whatever. So that was and again, you know, I did this in front of like 20,000 people 2 or 3 times. I think that series, 3 different districts came to Louisville. So every weekend we went down there and put on this performance. And it was super fun, and it got me kind of more comfortable working in front of crowds. And as King Cobra here said, they start that at an early age. Like, I was 6 when I did my first Bible reading, which is like a 5-minute reading. You get up in front of a congregation, you'd read 5 minutes out of the Bible that was assigned to you. And they did have the other talks. By the time I was 18, I was a ministerial servant, so I was actually traveling to other congregations and giving 45-minute-long sermons to start off the Sunday meeting. And like it's, I mean, it gives you kind of a big head, because you go to this congregation and you give this speech and everybody applauds at the end of it, and they would take you out to dinner or they'd take you out to lunch or whatever. And that kind of stuff, I guess, felt good. And I do feel like that was a unique experience, and that kind of training to speak in front of people and also to like knock on people's doors served me in, you know, like being able to do public speaking is a pretty huge deal in like business. Like if you've got to do training or travel, like most, that's something that most people have no experience with. So they like all fucking clam up and stuff. So, those are some of the good times. And yeah, I also was a pioneer, which meant that I spent at least 90 hours a month knocking on doors from the time I was 18 to about 22. And there was about 10 or 12 other pioneers in our congregation, and we kind of got to be a close-knit group. And it was – I wouldn't say that knocking on doors was fun, but the camaraderie that you got out in those fields, and like, you know, someone would get like some crazy person that would start talking in tongues. And sometimes in the summer, we'd be sitting there in the cars in the driveway and our windows were rolled down because it's sweltering, and you could hear the conversation happening from the front porch. And we would be just like shaking silently with laughter at this person. I remember one of my friends, Peter, who used to do a podcast with us on Bald Move before it just became a me and Jim thing. This one guy showed him this like gold lion ring, and he said he was the Lion of Judah. And in the middle of the conversation, he says, I feel the spirit moving me. And he started doing this weird little dance and started speaking in tongues. That kind of stuff was hilarious and fun. And that's why I tell people, if you want, like a lot of people say, oh, if you want to get rid of Jehovah's Witness, you just do weird shit to him at the door. No, we live for that shit, man. You want to show up naked? We will tell that story for 5 years. You want to show up with some kind of dagger and invite us for a Satan worshiping thing? We will eat out on that story for years. The only way that I know of, the surefire way to get rid of a Jehovah's Witness, is to tell them, put me on your do not call list, and that will buy you a year or two of peace. Depending on how pussy your congregation is, because like an experienced elder every 2 years is supposed to call on a house that's on the do not call list to make sure that it's still the original occupant of, like, you know, does blah 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 live here, and is this still the wishes of the family not to be contacted by Jehovah's Witnesses. But in practical purposes, nobody wants to knock on the doors where people say don't come here. So if you're on that list, then you know, the elders are kind of lazy. Like, they're supposed to contact me every year to make sure I'm still happy not being a Jew. I don't know, to like try to encourage me to come back. I've never been contacted. Never. Because, you know, they know I'd give them what for. So that's the thing. Like, they're just humans. So in practical purposes, if you're on a do not call list, you could probably 10, 12, 15 plus years and never be contacted by them. So there's a tip. All right. That's enough of Jehovah's Witness crapola. Let's see. Podcart fan from Cincinnati, local boy. How about some parenting advice? I have a 6-month-old son and he's pretty great, but man, the first few months had some very frustrating moments. Any advice for different developmental phases? So I think, because my son is 9 going on 10, he'll be 10 in October. And I've always heard people say, oh, you know, how old are they? Oh, well, that's a fun age. And you got to understand, I came into parenting like dreading the situation. I didn't want to do it. Like, I did not want to have children. And I was kind of bullied / pressured by my ex into having children. And so I was expecting it to be like, well, I'm not going to have a life now for 2 to 3 years. And this is going to suck. And I'm not going to get any sleep. And I'm going to be covered in shit, piss, and puke all the time. So I was expecting the worst, and he's going to cry all the time, and it's just going to be a nightmare. And I was pleasantly surprised. I've thought that all the ages that they were in were fun. Even the one he's in now, is like he's becoming a little person, and he's, you know, if you've heard of his podcast, you know he's mature for his age, and it feels like he's already, like, doing a lot of teenager stuff as far as, you know, you know, there's no longer any thought of unquestioning obedience, which I never tried to teach him anyway. Like, I made it a goal not to be the dad that's like, you know, do it because I say so. Or if I do that, like, that means, you know, it's super serious. You need to fucking do it now, and then you can ask for an explanation later. But I don't know, like, every kid's different, and I feel foolish giving advice in any kind of general way. I try not to talk down the kids. Like, one of the people are always impressed with Jack's vocabulary, and they're like, oh, he must do the reason he's got a big vocabulary is because, and he's going to mispronounce a bunch of words because I do, is because I don't talk to him any differently than I do on the podcast, except for I don't swear as much. I've started, like, this year I started slipping some swears in, which if you listen to the Goonies podcast, and plus apparently he can hear me screaming from his bedroom when I'm in the living room and I'm playing video games, which was a new thought to me. But I and a lot of times he'll ask me, what does such and such a word mean? And I explain it to him. But I mean, we've had conversations about world wars and plagues and space travel and how atmospheric refraction works. And I just never felt like I've had to dumb anything down. I felt like I've had to explain a bunch of stuff. But I've always had a philosophy is if he's asking the questions, then he's ready for the answers. You know, we've talked about he's already started asking questions about sex that I've answered him in as frank and honest way as I can. And, you know, the part of the challenge there is that, you know, his mother is trying still to teach him to raise him to be a Jehovah's Witness to the best of her ability, which is not going extraordinarily well for her. It doesn't seem like. But that was always a challenge, like, early on. Like, you know, you never lived until your three-year-olds come up and said, Daddy, are you going to be destroyed in Armageddon? And why or why not? And this is scary. Like, and that's, you know, it's hard to take a line. It's hard to take a line between, no, you don't have to worry about that, and what you're being told is stupid. And, you know, you have to try to find, because I didn't want him thinking that what his mom was teaching him was stupid or baseless. Because everything I've read in parenting says, you know, you don't really tear down or denigrate the other parent. So I had to take a couple things on the chin. But then, you know, when he got to about 6 or 7 and started reasoning more and, you know, paying attention at school and, like, seeing things on television, like Cosmos came out about, and a lot of stuff that I've been saying the whole time, like, well, this is what your mom thinks, this is what the people at your hall think, but your dad thinks this. And, like, you know, I remember, like, he was 5 years old. He's like, I just don't get it, Dad. I don't see how the whole universe, like, it makes more sense that God created the universe than the universe came from something the size of a marble, which I was trying to explain to him the concept of singularity. And that was, like, this, for some reason, to this day, he still says the Big Bang came from something the size of a marble. But I don't know, man. Like, it seems like that, you know, I've raised Jack because I didn't have much choice in it, to where he is kind of middle of the road to entertainment. Like, he doesn't watch rated R movies or M games, and he doesn't even really do a lot of PG-13 stuff. But I know a lot of kids that are exposed to, like, The Walking Dead from the time they're in their crib, and it doesn't seem to hurt them. I think the main thing is you just gotta love your kids. And it's really easy to make excuses to, you know, or to do a shitty job of parenting because you're tired and all that. But just remember, try to keep in mind that these days are very short. Like, I cannot believe it's been 10 years since Jack has been born. And that no matter how tired and frustrated you are, that, you know, when they're asking these questions and they're doing, these are things that they're going to stick with them forever. And you're also going to be, like, already, like, I miss the days of being able to rock him to sleep and tell him stories at night and to tuck him in. And that's kind of, like, becoming less and less of our routine. Like, the other day, we were at Kings Island the other day, we're in this big wave pool, and, like, he was kind of clinging to me, like onto my side, because we were in the deep end doing the things and kind of, kind of hugging me. And I'm like, man, it's been probably a year since he's done anything like this, because, you know, he's just trying to scrabble onto me for purchase. So try to keep all that stuff, I guess, in the forefront, and don't ever shy away from spending time with him. So that's pretty generic advice, but, and also I feel that I've only got one kid, and I know how so much harder it is to have, like, 2, 3, 4. So I'm, like, playing the game on easy mode. So, but yeah, I would encourage you guys to take time for each other, take time for yourself. You know, one of the reasons I think I'm a really good dad is because I'm a part-time dad. I've got plenty of time to indulge in my hobbies and my passions and my work and stuff when he's not around. So when he's around, I can kind of focus on him. And I know a lot of people don't have that luxury, but if I'd had my way, I think that every week I would have arranged for my wife to have a night off, for I to have a night off where we'd watch, and then like every other week to have like a date night. Because if you don't take that time, you know, I feel like that's how like parents end up being resented. And that's, it's weird because I remember my parents like feeling very clearly that they loved me, but they also kind of resented me on some levels. And that they were only kind of sticking together because they weren't happy, but they felt like they had to do it for the children. And that's no fun either. So, I mean, try to keep it fun, try to take care of yourself and each other. And there's my advice. Okay, let's see what else. I'm going to skip to Twitter because I haven't done any of the Twitter stuff yet. Fernando wants to know your thoughts on the RNC last night, and did you hear Jon Stewart's speech on Colbert's show last night? No, I didn't. I had to do – I've got all that stuff recorded because I want to see the acceptance speech and whatnot. And I'll probably watch that tonight, but last night yesterday I did Mr. Robot stuff up until I had to go have dinner and then go see Star Trek and do the Star Trek podcast, so I didn't get to see any of that stuff. I will say that I was actually kind of worried that it was going to be apocalyptic in Cleveland, and it seems like, you know, there was, you know, the usual amount of protest, and I saw that people urine was being thrown at people, but like there wasn't an all out riot. No one not that I saw died. So, you know, if we can get through Philly, the Democratic convention, with a similar kind of toll, I would be relieved. And that, like, I was kind of scared at just how polarized things are getting in the country, like what that's going to look like when everything hits a fever pitch. So, but yeah, I mean, obviously I'm not a Trump guy. I used to identify as a Republican and conservative. Now I guess I would describe myself as independent, but on most parts leaning Democratic or liberal. But mostly I try to be what I think is the party. And that's what's frustrating, is with only two parties, it's very hard to find a party that does everything right. Because I try to look at it. That's why I don't describe myself as Democrat, because I can foresee a day where I will no longer agree with their platform. And I see so many people doing mental gymnastics to identify with a particular party. When really what I'm interested in is does their platform line up with how I see the world, my values, and what I perceive as true, you know, factually, scientifically, ethically, morally, and I line, you know, I vote with that party or for independence or whatnot. But yeah, I didn't, I mean, it's just some of the stuff you see now is bizarre. And the other thing that, if I'm being super candid about, is I'm not super excited about this election at the top level, because I'm not a huge Hillary Clinton fan. I think it's exciting that you might have a female president, a woman president, but I feel like that she's a pretty compromised candidate. And I felt like this is the first time in a long time that I didn't really see anybody in the Republican field that I was even tempted by. Like, you know, there's always like, I was a big John McCain fan until I think the Sarah Palin thing. But back when I was a Republican, I always admired like Joe Biden. Like, I remember hearing him at the outset of the Iraq war talk about how Iraq is this complicated three states and it's held together by Saddam. And if you kick, and I'm like, huh. And I remember after like everything he said came to essentially pass, and that's kind of like what will probably end up happening over there, some kind of three-state solution. Like, I remember, it's like, wow, that guy was really with it on foreign policy. So, but I don't know. Like, this year, it's weird at the national ticket. Like, I'm definitely going to vote this fall, but and it's not going to be like, oh, wow, I'm really proud to be supporting this person. It's going to be more like, this is the clear lesser of two evils situation. Moving on, let's see, would you guys ever consider having a joint Snapchat account? I don't think Jim knows what the fuck Snapchat is. I am on Snapchat, and I have Cecily and she sends me funny stuff all the time, and I try to remember to send her funny stuff, but like, I think we're just, I feel like we're too old for it. Like, I just don't get it. The only reason I'm on is because my girlfriend's hilarious, and she sends like hilarious shit from work and when she's out and about. And you know, if I want to send her something, like yesterday we're at Kings Island, they had this post about this new roller coaster. I said, so we're going to Snapchat on that. But yeah, probably not. Probably not. And the other thing is, until we get, I'm overwhelmed with social media. Like, at this point, I can no longer keep up with my private Facebook messages. I can barely keep up with my email, like mission critical email, the show email, and like my private messages on the forum. And I try to participate in the forum threads that I'm personally interested in. But adding another like Instagram or Snapchat or Periscope, like I don't know who would run that. So we'll probably have to get bigger staff and someone that can like, hey, make sure you're keeping an eye on this and nothing crazy is happening, and or that we're actually doing something with it before we do something like that. Now, there's also been ideas like, hey, what if we did something special for like a Periscope or Snapchat when we're down at a con or something? But it's just one of those things where I just don't see the utility of it, and we're not into it enough to like do the job that it needs to do the job well enough to make it worthwhile. Anthony B said, my external hard drive no longer functions. What's the best way to retrieve my files? Okay. If the stuff is vital, like, and you're willing to spend $500 to $1,000, take it right now, securely package it, and send it to a professional data recovery lab, because they will absolutely get that shit back for you. If it's stuff that's like, it would be nice to have, but you're not going to spend money to recover it, I've heard that if you take a hard drive, came up in my second to last gig, we'd have hard drives that were in that kind of like, it was, you know, nothing mission critical and everything, but there was like something that someone would really like, you know, it'd save them some man hours if we could recover it. And we put these drives in a freezer bag, and we took the time to put some silica gel in there as well, like the desiccant, the stuff that says, you know, do not eat when you get it from sneakers and whatnot. And we put it in there overnight, and then we hooked it up the next day to an external hard drive reader, and we were able to get that thing going long enough to recover the data that the person needed off of it. And we did that 3 or 4 times successfully. But anytime that we absolutely had to have data recovered, I used a professional data lab a couple times, and like, it's amazing. Like if the drive isn't physically damaged, and by that, I mean, it hasn't been on fire, someone hasn't shot a pistol through it, they're going to be able to get your data back, because these hard drives, there's a couple things that can happen. Like the CKEDs can go bad, the stuff that actually reads it, they're no longer precisely, reading, or the motors that spin in it are not, and for whatever reason, freezing it can move the lubricant or it flex that internal circuit board enough to make the connection long enough that try to attempt to recover your files. But yeah, if you absolutely have it, like if it's your tax records or family photos that you only have those copy of because you didn't make a backup, and you got the money, I would send it to a professional lab, because they will be able to get results for you. It used to be back in the old days, I guess this is not physically possible, but the heads that actually crash onto the platters and like ruin the magnetic cut, and like you could actually do physical trauma. But the way I understood, in like the last 10 years, the hard drives have been engineered to where it's not possible for that to happen unless you like grab the hard drive and start banging around while it's writing and stuff. So that's what I would recommend, those two methods. Eric wants to know how many F-bombs you drop. Well, I feel like I haven't been swearing as much. Is that... Have I? But I don't know. I've got it because that's something Jim and I always argue about, like who swears more. And he says, I definitely swear more. And, yeah, I don't have a dog because it's not like I'm super offended. But I don't know if that's true or not. And I do... Like, every week I listen to at least one of our podcasts for quality control purposes. And every once in a while I'll like think, okay, well, I'm going to tally who's swearing more. And by 15 minutes in, I've forgotten. So I've never actually done a time study, but I don't know. If anyone's got an exact count, send it in. Let's see. Weird. These, like, I see what Jim's saying now, that these things jump around on you when you're trying to read it. We haven't started working on a BuffyCast. Theodore K. wants to know about that. That's when Jim gets back. It's at the top of our list. Let's see. He also wants to know, have we done Stranger Things? No. So like in the first half of summer is pretty much the regular schedule as far as my having my kid. But in the second half of summer, I get him, my ex and I's time flip so that I get him for a lot more. And also she had to trade me a weekend earlier in the summer to accommodate her Jehovah's Witness convention. So I've had him like 90% of the time in all of the last 3 weekends, and I get him for one more weekend coming up, and that's really cut into my adult television watching time. But I saw the trailer, and me and Cecily were both like completely in on that. We like I'm legit excited to see it, and I've also heard nothing but good things from the people that I've talked to about it. So probably next weekend is where I'm going to kind of clear out some scheduled time to watch that. I poured myself a big old glass of bourbon, and I'm just now getting to it. That's the other thing about doing solo. No drink time. I can't just throw it to him and have him talk for a couple seconds and me drink. Okay, let me skip back to the forums. This is going better than I expected. Let's see. So that was the parenting advice. Netflix just approved more episodes of Making a Murder, JTMY92 says. What do you think they're going to cover? I hope if they do, a new case, I hope that they go back and give us an update on the legal wranglings that have happened since then, or maybe they're just going to wait, or it could just be just part two, because, you know, he's had like this all-star lawyer, that's got like, she's got a perfect record of overturning convictions, and she works with the Innocence Project, and she's like gotten 12 people off. And not gotten off, like used evidence to overturn their conviction. That like getting off implies some kind of technicality or something. But I hope they just kind of do a season two where they catch us back up with what the state of it is. And you know, I don't think it's going to come out anytime soon because like I don't even think any of the trial stuff has begun. It's neat because like I know Adnan from season one of Serial just got approved to have a retrial. It's interesting to see some of these things that, you know, maybe they're miscarriages of justice. Maybe they're just where the justice system wasn't having its best day. I think it's neat that we get to see that kind of come through and run its course. Melia says, was Jim really quote unquote on the phone during the latest Mr. Robot cast? Are Jim and Aaron the same person? No, we're definitely not the same person. And he was on the phone, but we did this technique where he actually brings a professional rig with him. He brings the studio mic, a backup, the same mic we use in the studio, and a very miniature mixer that he uses on his laptop. And we're talking over the phone, which is kind of shitty audio quality, but he's actually recording his end. And then he sends it to me, and we synchronize it together. And it sounds, we get the vocal quality like we're both in the studio together. But it's funny because we haven't done one of those in a while. Like we used to, for there a period of time, I think there was a year where I was in Cincinnati and he was in Indianapolis, and we did all our podcasts like that. And I forgot, like, the timing is a bit off because, you know, we talk over each other quite a bit anyway, but like I found that these were unintentional where we both started talking and then it's like, oh, wait, okay, you go ahead. And I had to clean up some of that stuff in editing. Some of them I just left in, but, we're able to, like, vocal quality, I think, make it seem like we're in the studio even if we're not. And the only time we don't do that is, like, if you know, I'm trying to think. If something goes wrong with our recording equipment, I guess, because I feel like that if he calls into the cell phone, it doesn't sound terrible, or especially if he's on Skype, but it always sounds best when you got the local audio. Let me go back to Twitter and see what we got going on. Oh, here's an interesting one. Michael Hernandez says, do you have a go-to checklist for buying a new car, preference for certain makes? I've only deliberately shopped for a particular make and model of a car once. When I was 27, I got like a massive promotion at my work. And as a reward, I wanted to get a really cool sports car. And my idea of a really cool sports car is like a Nerdmobile. And on my short list was a Mitsubishi 3000 GT VR4 or a Dodge Stealth Twin Turbo. And those are essentially the same car. Dodge and Mitsubishi got together, and collaborated on these cars. Like another example is the Eclipse and the Talon. Those are the same cars. Like the Vibe, the Pontiac Vibe and the Toyota Matrix are the same car. So it's kind of one of those deals. And like when I was a teenager, like I was in high school, I thought they were the coolest fucking things. So they had these active aero systems where their suspension and the spoilers and the ground effects would actually raise and lower based on your speed. Had real rear wheel steering that claimed to increase your turning ability over speeds of 40 miles an hour. Had like adjustable suspensions from the cockpit, so you could go to comfort mode. to sports modes, where like it's really pounding the kidneys suspension mode. It had adjustable exhaust, where you could flip from economy to the sport, and it would quiet, like it's kind of stealth mode, so it would actually reduce the sound of the engine exhaust. And it had like this just really awesome seating, and it was fucking fast. It was like a 3-liter six cylinder with twin turbos, and it would go 0 to 60 in less than 5 seconds, or about that flat. And it is the fastest four-wheel car I'd ever drove. And I did a lot of research and very carefully kind of picked, and I found a professor up in Purdue University in Lafayette was selling a beautiful Hunter Green first generation VR4, and he was the sole owner, and I got it at like 57,000 miles, and I drove that, and I sold it right when it had like 94,000. It's awesome. It's still my favorite car I've ever owned. It was my daily driver, which sucked because I was had a long commute, and the clutch was so fucking stiff that in stop and go traffic, I felt like my left leg was going to be like twice the size of my right one after like a summer of stop and go traffic. If I was ever going to get advice for buying a sports car, is like, don't get it if it's your daily driver. Like if it's a Sunday driver, holiday driver, vacation driver, fine, but have something else. But that's the idea. Usually I go out and I'm like, what am I trying to get? And I do some, I look at consumer reports and increasingly online materials to find like recommended cars of a type that I want. Like, do I want a sedan? Do I want a pickup? Do I want, you know, when I was living in Greenfield, Indiana, a concern was I had to have all wheel drive because, you know, the roads would get ridiculous in the winter. And then I go and I research those categories on Consumer Reports and internet, find good recommendations. And, you know, Consumer Reports is great because they give data on how reliable those cars are by subsystem, which nowadays it's hard to find a car that's just a complete piece of shit. But they even do stuff like going back in time. So, like, you know, if you want to know, you know, how reliability is a car in its first year through its like 10, you know, 10 years old, those are great. And then I try to find out like what the going rate is, and, you know, look at Craigslist and look at, you know, whatever your auto trader. Are you buying from a dealer or a private individual? I try always to buy from a private individual because you're just getting stuff at a discount. And my other piece of advice, there's two other pieces of advice. Number one, maybe three, don't fall in love with a car, because that's when you get stupid and you make stupid decisions. Always keep like a detached air and know that, and this goes for a lot of things in life, plenty of fish out in the sea, plenty of cars in existence. Like even when I was hunting a relatively rare thing, like a first generation VR4, you know, maybe only one every couple weeks would come around, but still it's like, you know, waiting a couple months to get the perfect thing is better than getting something you don't want or paying too much for it. Number two is always negotiate. You can almost always, when you're dealing with a private individual, take 10% off of the asking price. Like if they're wanting $10,000, you can offer them nine. And nine times out of 10, they're going to either take it, especially if you have cash, or they're going to come out with, well, how about 9,500? And then that's like pretty, like people's like, well, I don't want to negotiate, don't want to haggle, it's too stressful. What's stressful about asking for 10% off? And if they say no, you can still buy, you can still fuck. No one has ever been so irate by me offering like 10% off that they refused to sell me the thing that they were selling me, right? So like you've got nothing to lose. Just ask, will you do it for 9,200 or whatever? And if they don't give it to you, which is frequently what happens, the other thing they do is like, how about 95? Boom, you just saved $500 for 3 seconds of talking. There's this one guy, Russ, who I grew up with at one of my old congregations, and he was a real wielder and dealer. And I remember as a teenager, I'd ask him, he's like, you know, aren't you nervous about that? And isn't it a pain? He's like, Aaron, I will talk all day to save $500. And when you think about, like, I don't know how much you make, you know, per day or per week, but five, like if you spend an hour dickering with a dealer and you save $500, how many people get $500 an hour at anything? And, you know, if you can take the emotion out of it and the nervousness that you're just at, you know, especially when you're dealing with private parties to ask for a discount, it's super easy. You just have to do it. I did that. And like, I kind of have enjoyed the haggling process. Like my best haggling story ever was I when I was buying a mattress before I got my Casper, the last mattress I bought, I had two different mattress factories. There's the same chain, and I had them while I'm on the phone, and these managers were essentially playing a game of who will take less profit margin on this goddamn mattress. And it was glorious. Like, I saved something like 40%, and the final guy, like, called his district manager and got and, you know, I mean, that just goes to show, like, that mattress was priced double of what they were willing to let it walk out the door. And I wasn't robbing them. Like, this is stuff, like, they're not going to get in trouble for it. So always, always haggle for this stuff. And the final tip is, when you're buying from private parties, is people try to screw you. Not as much as you'd think, because I'm a big believer that people are, in the final analysis, good people and honest people. But sometimes it happens, and a lot of people are like, I don't know anything about cars, I don't know what to look for. Find a mechanic that you know and trust, and you're eventually going to need one. So, like, that's one of the first things I do when I get into new areas. I find a mechanic, and I moved to Cincinnati, don't know anybody. So I got on Reddit, the Cincinnati subreddit, and I started asking, hey, I live on the east side, what are some recommendations? They give me a dealer recommendation. A mechanic recommendation. Most mechanics for like $100 will give your car like a fairly thorough inspection. And you can also ask to get an oil change, which will tell them a lot about, like, you know, has he changed oil frequently? Is there bits of metal in there? You know, how gunky is it? You can tell a lot by paying a trusted mechanic $100 to look at a car. And I'm not saying, like, if you're out in the market for $1,500 shit box, you should do that, because you're pretty much guaranteed something's going to be wrong on it. But, you know, if you're spending $10,000, $12,000 for a car, hell yeah, spend $100 to make sure that its gaskets, you know, head gaskets not getting ready to blow, or its transmission's not on its last legs, or, you know, any number of the innumerable things that they can tell you as far as its maintenance. Like, did they do the 60,000 mile maintenance? Did they do 100,000 mile maintenance? Like, I think that's, you know, and I've never, like, that saved me once, where a guy, I don't even know if he knew that the car was fucked up, but, like, you know, that's always a little tricky. Like, hey, I want to buy your car. A condition of that is, you know, you can drive it to the mechanic, or I can drive it to the mechanic, but I'm going to pay for an inspection. I've had one guy decline, and then I just put my hand slowly on my wallet and backed away. I had one guy where he did let me do it, and it turns out the car was a fucking mess and it was going to need thousands of dollars of repair. And you can do two things with that. You can either beat him down on price if you really want it and you want to do the repairs, you can just walk away. But most of the time, it's a nice peace of mind. You know, you can do Carfax and all that stuff to find out if it's been in a wreck, or, you know, it's been totaled, or it was a flood car or whatnot. But giving a mechanic $100, $150 as a peace of mind on a private party sale, I think is clutch and key. So that's that. Let's see. Louis B has got a question here on the Google Hangout. Said he's expecting a baby boy in January. I love the Goonies podcast where you brought Jack on. Any tips for exposing him to TV, movies, and video games? Do it slow. Like, the way I exposed Jack to video games is when he was about 3 years old, I got an Atari 2600, like, you know, one of those things you can just plug in your TV, and it had, like, Joust and Missile Command and, like, all those, like, the games I started off when I was 4 or 5 years old, and keep him busy with that, and then get an emulator and get some NES titles, have him play through Mario Brothers, like, classic Mario Brothers with him, and Mega Man, and, you know, that kind of shit. And then, you know, I went from there to a PS2, and he played, you know, Shadows of the Colossus when he was like 5 or 6. We're playing Shadows of the Colossus, and I forget what some of the other our favorite games are. But Little Big Planet. Oh shit, we played a shit out of Little Big Planet, all 1, 2, and 3. But you know, those are really fun times, and kind of like that gives an appreciation. Like if you start him off on the PlayStation 4 or the Xbox One, they're never going to want the graphics are so good, they're never going to want to go back and play that old shit. So you got to start them like in that old stuff. And that's also, like, you know, it's a stick and a button. Like, anyone can play an Atari 2600 game. As far as movies and stuff, like, I think I would have exposed Jack to more stuff earlier, but I've got my ex to worry about, because she's very much, you know, I would get biweekly phone calls like, what were you, you know, she would be pissed at that I let him see something or another. And like, you know, like I think when he was six, we watched Batman Begins, which, you know, has some scary stuff. It was a scarecrow. And that's the thing. I always watch it with him. And like, you know, he's kind of tucked under my arm. And if he's scary or something, I ask him like, you know, is this too much for you? If not, keep going. Like, just listen, you know. And the other thing is, you know, if he has nightmares that night, that's kind of normal. But if they persist for a couple days, then you push too hard, you know, back off a bit. And every kid's different. Like, some kids have a naturally higher tolerance for like risk and separation and scary stuff. And some kids have a lower threshold for that kind of stuff. So you just have to really, I think, start off slow. And there's tons of, like, you know, like, think of all the Pixar movies that come out in the last 20 years that are fun to watch as adults and fun to watch. Like, we got in this when Jack was about two, we got in this Wall-E rut where I must have watched Wall-E with him 20-30 times. And it's funny because, like, I really liked Wall-E, and I watched the first few times. I'm like, it's a good movie. And then I'm like, I started to hate the movie. And then I came back around to, like, appreciating on an even deeper level. And, you know, like, it's a weird experience you go through. And I never got him into, like, Dora the because I thought that stuff was stupid. Like, that baby, that you know, baby Einsteins and the imagination movers and stuff. He got into Wiggles because his mom let him watch that shit. But I thought that stuff was obnoxious. I didn't like watching it. And it's also, he never did any of the stuff that's supposed to make it educational. Like when Dora's like, you know, where is the golden triangle? Is it up my ass? He would just sit there like a zombie and watch it like he did any TV. So, like, okay, if I can choose something that I can at least tolerate versus something like this. But on the other hand, you also got to realize that, and this is something I'm coming with YouTubers, like, I love Pee-wee's Big House, or what was it, the Pee-wee's Playhouse, Pee-wee Herman's Playhouse. And I asked my dad, like, before his heart surgery, because it made me think of this. So, like, what did you think of Pee-wee's Playhouse? He's like, oh my god, that was the stupidest thing. This guy talking his obnoxious voice, and he had these obnoxious friends, and these dumb games. And it's like, I just thought it was the stupidest thing, but he let me watch it, and I thought it was hilarious. And now, like, it's kind of like subversive cult humor. My son likes some of these YouTubers that they're nothing wrong with them. They're just obnoxious as shit and dumb and doing this shtick that's asinine, but I don't have to like it. I just have to not be, I mean, that's how you turn into a grumpy old man, is you start, you know, saying that just because I don't get this music's too loud, this music, you know, like, I'm trying real hard to resist when I hear stupid shit, to say, this is stupid shit. It's like, I don't get it. It's not for me, but, you know, my kid likes it. So, but I, you know, as far as violence and sexuality and swear, I mean, I feel like, again, that's not super important to a kid's development, as long as you love them and you're there watching it with them, which is key. Never would I take my son to see a PG-13 movie. Well, maybe nowadays, he's almost 10, but, like, you know, if before I would go and watch, like, take him to see a superhero movie, I'd go watch it myself, because some of that shit's intense, man. And, you know, just check. It's like, is this good? Is this funny? Is this age appropriate? And then if it was, then I could always go back and see it again with him. But I think as long as you do it together and it's, you know, that they feel safe and loved, then that's the important thing. Okay, let's see. Michael Hernandez wants to know, best advice for handling an obnoxious person in a movie theater without getting arrested. Dude, I inherited a violent temper from my father, and it came out in, like, you know, with him, like, with road rage and stuff. And I got in my mid-20s, and I was going down that path, and I would do the same thing. Like, you know, someone cut me off, and I'm going to get fucking on their bumper, or I'm going to brake check them, or I'm going to honk and flip them and do all this stuff. And I had this, like, hour-long commute, and every day I would show up, like, sweaty and red-faced, and I'd get home all in a bad mood and pissed. And I just had this, like, epiphany where I'm just not going to do that. I'm just going to zen out and plan myself to get there 15, 20 minutes early. And if I do, then great. I can go, you know, take a crap and read my cell phone, or I can make myself a hot cocoa or a Red Bull because I don't drink coffee, or I can shoot the shit with my coworkers, but I'm not going to be running late and let some guy that's being an idiot on the road ruin my day. Similar thing with the movie theaters, because there's like, it would, if people were talking or being obnoxious to cell phones, it would send me in a red zone. And like, I got into near fights with several people where like I would say, please, can you please be quiet? And then they would up the ante and be even more obnoxious. And then I'd kick them their chair as hard as I could. And then it was like, you want to fight me, bro? And then, so in the last 10 years, I have come to an epiphany on that, where my reaction now is, if I feel like, I mean, because the thing is, everyone knows you shouldn't talk in a fucking movie theater, right? So you're either dealing with someone who is the mental capacity of a child, which it's not going to go well to try to fight with them, or they just don't care. And, you know, getting in fights with people that have nothing to lose and no kind of pride or manners is something that you're going to lose, because I presume that you are a good person and you do have some kind of manners and you were raised right and you do care, you give at least a little bit of shit about your family and your reputation. So like, they're going to be able to outfight you every single time. So what I do now is, if someone's being obnoxious and disruptive, like in the first couple minutes of the movie, I get up, I go see the manager, and I say, I want my money back because there's someone being obnoxious in the theater. And a lot of times they're like, oh, we'll go speak to them. I'm like, thing is, the movie's already been ruined for me. I'm not in the right headspace. And they give me free passes, and I come back in a couple days and I try again. But like, gone are the days of me digging progressively madder and madder in the first 30 minutes of the film, and then I flip out on somebody. It's just not worth it. And there is no good way to, it's like, say you get a line jumper at King's Island. You're not going to show them the error of their ways. They know they're cutting in line, and they don't give a shit, because most of the time they get no. So, you know, let them cut in line and go fucking narc on them. Get them thrown. Like, that's the real delight, is when you see someone get kicked out. I wish all theaters rolled like, what's that place in the Alamo Draft House, where they actually have people like ushers and bouncers, where they catch people using their cell phones or talking and they eject them. Like, I wish there was more of that stuff going around, but I don't know. The other thing is, I found that as I stopped going to shitty movies where teenagers hung out at, I started having better experiences. Go earlier in the day, go early on weekends. Don't go like, you know, 9 o'clock on a Friday night or 7 o'clock on a Saturday night. Go early and you just miss a lot of that shit. So, yeah, I mean, again, my advice is just nope out. Get your free passes and come back another day. And I mean, the other thing is, I guess this is also regional, because I've talked to a buddy that lives in like Long Island, and I guess there is no such thing as a respectful movie audience out there. People are talking, and they're talking on cell phones, and they're texting, and they're talking at the screen. And I don't know what you do. You just go to the art house films, or you find some place like an Alamo Draft House, or I would just get a fucking really nice home theater and stop going, because that shit ruins my time. All right, what else we got? Let's see. Thoughts on Carrie Coon as a female lead for season 3 of Fargo? Excited? Hell yes. Hell yes, I'm excited. It's Carrie Coon on Fargo. Why would I not be excited? Josh, that was Sam M. Josh on Twitter says, rather than a Han Solo origin movie, why not an HBO, AMC, or Netflix TV series with a well-established showrunner? Yeah, I mean, it seems like that's ripe for like a long form, but on the other hand, I don't know, man. After the last Star Wars, I feel like that it's kind of like Bill Simmons got this philosophy that if your team wins the Super Bowl, you are no longer allowed to criticize the head coach or the owner or the star quarterback for 5 years. I feel like I'm not going to second guess anything that Star Wars does or Disney does with Star Wars until they start making bad shit. So, you know, the other thing is like, I grew up, I mean, Han Solo has an origin story. It's already been told. They're probably not going to do that. I mean, or to what extent are they? I mean, is he still going, how did him, in the old days, Han met Chewie, like Chewie was in some kind of Imperial slave camp and Han was a lieutenant in the Imperial Navy, an up and comer. and he saw some guys whipping him or abusing him. It's kind of like, you know, Moses in Egypt, and he went over and put a stop to it, and then he had a death mark on him, and then Chewie owed him a life debt, and they became friends forever after. Like, are they going to tell that story, or are they going to throw all that canon away, which seems like they've reserved the right to do, and tell something else? I don't know. Yeah, would a Star Wars on Netflix or HBO be awesome? Yes, it would. I wonder if we're going to... I thought that we were going to get a couple live-action, long-form Star Wars television series, but, you know, because it's not like ABC doesn't own their own networks that they could put that platform out on. But, yeah, I just don't really have an opinion. And the other thing is I'm not... One of the things about being like a podcaster where you narrowly focus on pieces of entertainment is that I used to be the guy that would follow the development history of all the movies. Nowadays, like, I just don't. Like Cecily and I were talking about Suicide Squad last night. I know nothing about that movie other than it's got the Joker in it, and apparently Batman has got a cameo and Will Smith is in it. Like, I don't know anything on the trailers. I just don't have time when I'm spending 10 hours a week researching and reading email about a specific show times three or four or five. I don't have time to keep up with that stuff. And even in the off seasons, like, I find out Carrie Coon's on Fargo usually by reading the forums or someone, you know, sending it to me on Facebook or email. Like, I don't keep up with that off season stuff very much either. It's all very focused on what is going on right now and to the exclusion of everything else. So yeah, I think that might be it. Let me refresh Twitter and see. It looks like, yeah, that's about it. I might go on the forums and see if there's anything new. Already talked about Mr. Sab, already talked about Stranger Things. Nah, we don't. We almost never do a season one podcast for a lot of reasons that Jim and I feel are good and valid. But that, whether we do a podcast on Stranger Things is whether I like it. I suspect I will. And then I always make an attempt to try to get Jim enthused in the things that I'm enthused about so we can do a podcast at it. And half the time it works, half the time it doesn't. Because the reality is, Jim and I lead very different lives as far as, you know, I've got a kid to deal with and I like to get out and do a whole bunch of stuff on the weekends. He's more, you know, he's got a girlfriend now that keeps him busy. He's way more into video games than I am. So he's like always looking to play the newest video game and listens to tons of podcasts about that. So, you know, almost all the TV that Jim watches, he talks about on a podcast, where I would say less than half the TV I watch, I talk about on a podcast. And, you know, that the first year we did this lot as a full-time profession, it was frustrating because I felt like we could always do more shows. But I kind of found that, like, when you get to a certain number of show load, that the quality and the enjoyment of thus suffers quite a bit. Not because I'm afraid of hard work, but it's like, I don't know, like the guy that does the oatmeal, the cartoon, just did a thing about how creativity is like breathing and you have to breathe in and breathe out. And like when we're doing five podcasts a week, say, that feels like you're just breathing out. You're like, you're just squeezing the sponge until it's dry. And like, it's not like, okay, well, we'll just do 15, 20 more hours a week and do seven podcasts now. It doesn't work that way. It's weird. It's like you get to a point where you just can't summon the same kind of, I mean, I can certainly read Reddit and the forums and research online and recite that shit, but the passion for it, the people respond to, the genuine delight of the fan experience, that's what's missing. And you know, that's why, like, that's one of the reasons I stopped doing Americans, because not only was I not digging the show, but like I was already overworked to the point where I was just having a bad time, which was magnifying it. So it's funny because that's something we used to get in arguments about, like, you know, we should do more, we should, you know, do less. I feel like right now we've kind of honed in on like what is our workload. My workload for that kind of stuff is a bit higher than Jim's threshold for that, which is why I do a lot of stuff independently on the side with Cecily and other podcasters, but it's still like I do have a limit. I didn't think that was I thought that like that I could just do everything and it didn't matter. It's just another, and I'd say, well, you know, like I'll just not sleep, or I'll not have as much of a personal life. But nah, I get burnt out the same as he does. It just happens at a different phase or a different frequency, and everybody's different. So, no, to answer your question, we're not going to do a Stranger Things podcast unless Jim super likes it and voluntarily, of his own free will, decides to watch the whole series. And then, like we do a lot of things, we'll do a Bald Move TV show on it where we'll just talk about the season in as a whole. And so stay tuned for that. And you can, feel free to bring it up on next lunch when he's around. But it's kind of in his court on that. Whether he gets excited and decides to do a podcast on it, I don't know. And I also don't know whether this is just a one and done. Because a one and done is like, man, those are super high risk. Because, it's one thing if you have a season of a show and it comes back at second and you're like, okay, well, it's got this audience and this pedigree. But if it's like a one and done and like the X-Files thing where you commit to doing that and then you do it and it turns out to be shit, you're not building an audience for the future. You're having a bad time doing it. And we'd much rather miss a season than do a season and end up having to stop it midway through. Because that's the other thing is like we got so many feeds and we got so many stuff to manage on Facebook and stuff to rotate in and out that that's getting to be kind of a chore. But yeah, long story short, no Stranger Things, unless it's a Bald Move TV. And we'll see what Jim has to do with that. Fracken said, I want to hear your egret impression if you have one. Jon Snow, and see, it's bad. John, you know nothing, Jon Snow. What am I doing? I'm not feminine, and I'm not doing a good Irish, Northern Irish accent, so I'm not very good. What's funny is Jim is really, like, he's got a really good Scottish, Irish, many different nationality accents, but he is super self-conscious, and he'll never bust it out. So I do have a, like I said, I have a solid King Candy from what was that? The Wreck-'em Ralph. I can do a solid King Candy. That's the limit. I do a solid Kermit the Frog, but that's about it. I do a shitty Rick Grimes that people like. But that's about it. Andrew in New York said, "What would it take for you guys to arrange a Bald Move combine and film it?" What is a Bald Move combine and film it? You and the other Bald Move host all do a 40-yard dash. Oh, okay, like an NFL combine. A 40-yard dash, Wonderlic, bench press, vertical, etc., and see who has the stuff to be the number one draftee. That would be interesting because if you guys don't know, all the guys from the personal arrogant side of the crew, Jesse, Levi, Eric is coming to Cincinnati in October to have our what we so we've been doing this thing for 5 years. We used to go to PAX, which is the Penny Arcade Expo in Seattle, and that was our big get together. We played board games and video games, and we realized that we were spending, $100 on the tickets just to sit in the expo hall and play video games. And then one time we spent half the time in the hotel lobby playing board games. We're like, why are we doing this? We're like, why don't we just get together and skip half, and especially when PAX started selling out. So we called it Buy PAX, because we were bypassing PAX, but also stood for the Blue Yonder and Personal Arrogance Expo. So we'd have all of their friends from Seattle, and we'd get together. We did it 1 year in Seattle, 1 year we did it in Bremerton, 1 year we did it in San Diego. This year we're hosting it in Cincinnati finally. But yeah, they come over for all the guys come out for a 4 day weekend, and we just drink, play video games, and board games all weekend. So that would be an excellent time to do. But I feel like we're already jam packed because Jesse's wanting to do some kind of board gaming stream for charity. Eric is wanting to do Eric and Jim are wanting to do an eating competition and film that, like, because Eric is a prolific eater and so is Jim. Like, for his size, he can pack shit away. Like, he's like a reptile. He has like one big meal a day, but my God, he can eat. There's like a couple two-man eating challenges here in Cincinnati of involving improbably sized hamburgers and pizzas and milkshakes and stuff, and they're wanting to pick one and do that and film it. So I don't know, but yeah, that's a solid idea. But since we're all that's the other thing is those guys are still in their late 20s, early 30s. Jim is in his mid 30s. I'm gonna be 40 in August. I suspect that my dashes, I'll probably do all right in benching and like strength because I'm a naturally big dude and I've always been kind of fairly naturally strong, but I've never been quick. And I've never been able to jump because I'm a white guy. So I feel like I would really fall down in those areas. Most feats of strength, I think I can beat everybody. For quickness, Jesse's pretty quick. Jim's pretty quick. And Wunderlich, that's like the mental thing. Like I mean, we're all, I think, fairly above average smarts kind of guys, despite, you know, my mispronouncing words and the way I talk and all that. So I have no idea. I've always thought that privately, don't tell him I said this, but I've always suspected Jim's smarter than me. Like him and his brother are geniuses and like polymaths, like gifted in art, gifted in math, gifted in just intellectual ability to retain information. And his brother is even smarter than he is. So I have a feeling that Jim or maybe Jesse would be the smartest of the crew, but I don't know. I think there might be one more thing that I was supposed to get to on Twitter, and then I got to get out of here. Cause I am way behind on the Bald Move finances, and I've got this weekend kind of blocked out that I'm going to be getting our QuickBooks up to date. Maybe not. Maybe I did get to everything. Let's see. I have Embarrass Westmont wants to know if I've watched the new 5-part OJ documentary, Made in America. No, but I am with Child to see it, because that's one thing that I was wanting to jump in on. After the first 3 episodes of OJ on FX, I tried to get Jim into that. And he said that he was going to catch up. No, we actually didn't do that. But yeah, he swore that he was going to catch up, and then like it got away from us, and we blew that kind of internal commitment. And I don't think it's I might get him to watch it before the Baldies, because that's going to probably rank pretty high in my list. But no, I'm with Child to see this 5-part series. I think it's fascinating. Let's see what else. Yeah, I'm thinking that's about it. If I missed anything, maybe we can retweet it and I'll hit it up next week. But hey, this has been fun. I actually went 15 minutes over. Thanks for all the great questions. Hope you guys enjoyed the solo edition. We'll be back next week with the lunch. I think the week after that, we're going to get back on the cocktail wagon. We might have done it this week, except for Jim somehow forgot that he was on vacation, which is why we booked a movie and did all this other stuff and had to kind of scramble to make it up. But yeah, we'll be back next week with another lunch on Friday, and the week after that, probably with another cocktail coming back. So thanks again. Have a great weekend. There's a big heat wave where I live, so if you're in the Midwest, try to keep cool. Keep an eye on the elderly and infirm around you, especially if they don't have any family. That's being a solid citizen and a solid human being, because they're the ones that take the brunt of this. And keep cool, and we'll see you next week. Have a great weekend, guys. Bye-bye.